Hey everybody, just a little morsel, a nugget of a conversation I had with Elon Musk about a week or so ago on what's known as a X space, a Twitter space formerly. And it was really a wonderful experience for me to talk to Elon. I've wanted to have him on the podcast for a long time, and I had to cram in my top three questions for him in about 8 minutes, as you'll find out in this very brief episode. And what I'm very delighted by is that I think I'm the first person to ever interview simultaneously Elon, his mother May, and his son Shar X A-E, however it's pronounced. They were all there. And his mother chimed in. She's quite delightfully here towards the end, kind of saving him from a question that maybe it was hard for him to answer, and maybe she recognized it. You be the judge. Perhaps it was a little too personal, but I felt like I had to shoot my shot and ask him this question from the real depths of my curiosity and affection for him. He's impossible not to like. I really vehemently despise and oppose the viewpoint that he's an anti-Semite. I think there's zero evidence for that. There's evidence to the contrary. He's visited Auschwitz. He's visited the kibbutzes in Israel that were so viciously attacked by Palestinian Hamas terrorists in October. And he wears a dog tag with "Bring Them Home" on it. I don't think these are things that an anti-Semite does. Sorry. He says he's aspirationally Jewish as well. So I was actually really pushed towards releasing this episode, in one sense, partially because of him and the reaction that he's always engenders in people. Like I said, the calls of him as an anti-Semite. I recently had a very well-known podcast guest who's been on the podcast before, extreme left-wing kind of politics, and he claims that he left Twitter X last year because of Elon and the anti-Semitism that Elon exhibits. This is a world-famous author, very popular blogger, et cetera. I won't give his name, but you could probably figure out who it is if you've listened for him long enough time. And then he actually had the temerity, the nerve to rescind an acceptance of an invitation he made to come on this podcast because of my having appeared on the Jordan Peterson podcast. And he claims Jordan Peterson is a vessel and vehicle for transphobia, which is another joke and calumny against a good man, as I have gotten to know Jordan very well over the last 1.5 years. So this gives you the kind of level of insight into some of the characters who inhabit the discourse politically, at least. And I feel not necessary to respond to them directly. I think I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing, let the haters kind of hate. And I want to bring to you the most interesting conversation. So I did, as you'll hear, invite Elon down to Chile and the South Pole to visit our experiments. And I hope he'll take me up on the offer. I'd love to introduce him to the team and show him the opportunities we have for astronomy. I think I was able to convey some physics and astronomy that he hadn't thought about before, which is kind of cute and fun and flattering for me to do. And it was just a great opportunity, and it was totally spontaneous, and it was really a wonderful episode. So I think you're going to like this little morsel, this nugget to get you through the weekend with my new friend, my buddy. Now, between Elon and I, we're worth $250 billion, and having this opportunity was too good to not release on the podcast channel. Hopefully, it's an appetizer for a much longer conversation with or without X Shaw and without May Musk, his mommy. Yeah, any way he wants to do it is fine by me. And so stay tuned. Maybe that's in the offing for 2024. Didn't have it on my bucket list, didn't have it on my bingo card, but here we are. So now enjoy this short little morsel interview and conversation between me, Elon Musk, his mommy, May, and his son, Shaw. Enjoy.
Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Brian Keating, a professor of physics at UC San Diego. I got two physics questions I'm hoping you can answer or chime in on. So I study the cosmic microwave background radiation, which is the sort of afterglow of the Big Bang, which discovered 60 years ago or so. And this radiation is thermal in origin, and we are applauding your efforts in the astronomy community to make the Starlink satellites dark for optical astronomy. But we microwave astronomers who use signals, we're trying to detect this afterglow of inflationary gravitational waves in Q-band, essentially in Q-band. And there's really no way to block out a million Kelvin equivalent signal that you're transmitting with Starlink. I'm wondering, is there any way we could work with you in from the South Pole or Chile where our observatories are located to have selective availability or some way? Because once this channel is gone, we'll never get it back. And this is, you know, potentially precluding a view into the, you know, inflationary origin of the cosmos. So I know it's very important to you, and we're appreciative of the astronomy efforts and optical astronomy, but microwave is a totally different ballgame.
Sure. I do think long-term the right place for telescopes or really any a receiver is in orbit or, you know, basically space, so you don't have express worth. And as what as Starship starts launching, we can have some pretty big telescopes.
We have 10-meter diameter telescopes. So pretty hard to put, and they don't really unfold the way that Webb would. But I mean, I think it would be something that, you know, selective availability. I'm basically blanking it over the South Pole. We only have two locations on Earth where we would need to have it unobstructed.
Okay. Would you say, like, basically just stop transmitting just over these?
Yeah, the two observatories. Yeah, in the Atacama Desert in Chile at 17,000 feet, and the South Pole, Antarctica, which is, you know, place we'd love to take you, by the way. Simons Observatory, Jim Simons funded it, and the NASA Science Foundation funds the South Pole Observatory called BICEP. So if you have any resources you could put me in touch with, it would be really appreciated.
We have a technical update every week. So I'll ask about any obscuration and microwave spectrum in Atacama and the Antarctica. So would that wish to in any way lead the progress of science?
That would be awesome. Thank you, Elon. I have one more question just related to physics and AI and related to Catherine's book, which brought us all here together tonight. So Catherine, congratulations, Mazel Tov on the book. So the book's called No Apologies. One of the things I hate most about ChatGPT, WokeGPT, is, you know, you'll ask it some question. I'll say, you know, what did Brian Keating write? And it'll say, you know, losing the Nobel Prize, correct. You know, Into the Impossible, correct. And then it'll say, A Brief History of Time. No, that's not correct. And I'll say, no, that's not right. I didn't write, that's Stephen Hawking. And then it'll say, oh, I apologize. I hate that. I hate the, I want the Catherine Brodsky No Apologies. But it made me think about a true Turing test. And I want to get your opinion on. I've asked Nick Bostrom and David Chalmers and your greatest ideas and thinkers, Peter Diamandis, our mutual friend. I said, do you know what Einstein called his happiest thought, Elon, that gave him shivers and titillated him? Do you know what he said that was? He said, it's PG, don't worry. He said, he said it was that an observer in free fall would experience no gravitational force. And it made me think, because to what extent could a computer or some silicon or even quantum computer, could it even have either a happiest thought or B, experienced the sensation, a visceral sensation of freefall? So I'm wondering if you could propose another, you know, kind of Turing test, a different definition of AGI, which would be actually coming up with new laws of physics or new complete paradigms of physics rather than just, you know, physics is the base layer of reality. I mean, you always quote that, right? So to what extent could we redefine AI as when it becomes generally intelligent, when it can experience happy thoughts, free fall, and other things like that? So curious about your thoughts.
Well, I think you can certainly have AI would think it's in a, would not realize it's in a simulation, which may be the case for us right now. And that would have a, you know, a true physics engine fall in a way that a human would fall and thus experience sensations in the same way. I do think there are some, the simulation hypothesis does explain some elements of quantum mechanics, such as, you know, only collapsing the probability distribution when you look at something. Like, why would something be only true when you look at it? Well, if it's rendering in real time, then that's actually how a video game works. Like, if you're in a video, like, let's say you're in World of Warcraft or something, and you walk through a forest, and there's a rat, and a rat appears. But before that, was there a rat or not a rat? There was only a probability of a rat, and the rat only became real when you looked in that direction. That collapsed the probability space, and the rat appeared. So I think conversion theory actually explains a lot of things that seem quite mysterious, the Schrodinger's cat situation.
But it requires infinite compute, right? Because they could always say, who simulates the simulator? Infinite regress, right?
It does beg the question of where is the simulator running? Yeah. And it may be that you have a whole series of nested simulations, but at some point there is the unknown thing.
But ultimately the physical all these things are going to be running on a rocky planet somewhere, right? That doesn't have infinite copper. It doesn't have infinite mineral density to retrieve. So, I mean, there are planetary limits to growth, as, you know, the Club of Rome would call it. Don't those provide, you can't imagine, changing the physical reality of an Earth-like planet. You can't imagine these simulations running on something very different from an Earth-like planet. It's not going to run on a Boltzmann brain. So at some level, it needs physical reality. And so, again, you can't break the law of the physics. So how does it get around the planetary resource problem? You can't make an infinite number of paperclips on a finite planet.
The universe may seem infinite to us, but frankly, if I was creating a simulation of this reality, I would put the stars far enough away that we do not have to simulate the details of the planets. And in fact, that is the situation. So you really just have to simulate with high fidelity what is observed on our planet. A much easier task than trying to simulate world reality. And I was joking that, when the James Webb telescope went up, that maybe the reason for the delays was that the simulators needed to bring more computers online, because now that we can see further, they needed to improve the fidelity of their simulation. So like their equivalent of Amazon Web Services or something. If I wasn't at least pretty good at physics, then the rockets would explode and the cars wouldn't work. Because physics is a very harsh judge. I mean, I like to say that, physics is the law and everything else is recommendation, meaning that, you can't break physics, but plenty of people can break the law. And if you're breaking physics, you're either wrong or you need a Nobel Prize, but most likely you're wrong.
Elon, can I ask you a question as a father of half as many kids as you have?
Sure.
So I've heard it said, you want to die on Mars. And our mutual friend, Lord Martin Rees, said, I just hope it's not on impact. And I agree with that. Being a father, you've got that cute kid probably right next to you. I mean,
he's on my shoulders right now.
Yeah. I mean, but you have other kids too. And to say goodbye to a child is, I don't have to tell you that it's the most painful thing you could ever imagine. But wouldn't you have to? I mean, wouldn't that be kind of the ultimate going away on a business trip if you were to do that? I don't know. I find it hard to go away on a trip, but I know you take your kids with you. I got one of my girls right here with me right now, and she doesn't want to go to bed. I mean, what would you do? I mean, could you really say goodbye to some of your kids or some of the people you love? Maybe your mom, and never see her again.
Well, I don't want to say goodbye.
I think we don't have to worry about that for a few more years.
Okay.
I think so too. Plus, maybe they'll want to come on the trip, right? You don't know.
Yeah.
And maybe it'd be quicker, so you can come back if you want.
Yes, you fear a lot of things in your life, but most don't happen.
That's very true.
Very true.
Thank you, Elon.